The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. This is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perreault columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. We've got an interesting one today, a new IPO called Bayrock Resources. Once it's on the ASX, it will presumably have the code BAY to keep things nice and simple. It's seeking to raise between $10 to $12 million at 20 cents a share with one for five attached free options. Its focus is northern Sweden, nickel, and more than nickel, the full suite of battery materials, copper and cobalt as well. Picked up an advanced historic project and some exciting early exploration targets. And to bring us up to speed with Bayrock's history and where it's going in northern Sweden, we have Dr. Ian Pringle. Now, many people will know Ian, but we might start out firstly introducing. G'day, Ian. How are you?
Hi, Barry. Good to catch up again.
Hey, I just mentioned there you're well known around the traps, but for those who haven't come across you, and given Bayrock is going to be a new ASX listed company, it'd be great if you could give us a bit of a background on your professional career today.
Well, thanks, Barry. Yep, I'm based here in Sydney, and I've been an exploration geologist for several decades with lots of interesting projects. Most recently, a Cobalt Blues cobalt project in Broken Hill. I was managing that project and discovered the railway deposit, which is their largest deposit. But I've also had a background in silver, Bowden silver deposit. I put a lot of time in there and found a big extension to that and several other mines. Sepon, I worked there with Oxiana Minerals and now Oz Minerals. And that was a very successful project. So more recently, I've focused very much on what we call the electric metals, and that's taken me to look at some of these nickel and high cobalt deposits, sulfide deposits, and we think we've got a fantastic group of them in northern Sweden, and that's a lovely location to be working.
Right. Okay. Now, you've mentioned, you've been around the traps there for a while, but what's your excitement level with this one?
Look, I'm right up there in the high 90s on the excitement level. And A, because we've picked up a small but very high-grade deposit called Langeau. It's in the Skellefteå mining district. So all around it, we've got infrastructure and a local workforce. It's been a mining district there with Boliden mining there for nearly 100 years. And, it's got a battery factory that's being built by Northvolt just an hour's drive away. But it's a handsome prospect that has been that has lots of potential to grow in size. So we're off to a terrific start. Already got 13,000 metres of core drilling that we didn't have to spend. And we've got a bunch of other peripheral projects immediately round Langeau, and also in five other tenement areas to the north of Skellefteå, where we've all got, all of them have got really good looking drill intersections of good grade nickel, and most with good grade cobalt. So we're very excited about those.
Right. And those latter ones, that's what you're calling the Northern Nickel Line?
Yeah, we call those the Northern Nickel Line. And they've all got, as I say, walk-up drill targets. We're planning to do some, state-of-the-art geophysics, some sky TEM, fly them each of our areas to try and define some of these interesting magmatic nickel targets. They've been explored in the past, but mostly for copper. And mostly by Boliden and small companies really looking at opportunities. But nobody's really looked at them for nickel and cobalt, and they've clearly got some very good starts to deposits in those areas. But with Langeau, it's been a mine before. We know that it's got the capability to be a mine again. It was a small mine discovered in the 1940s. and operated for several years, produced about 100,000 tons of high-grade nickel, and then it closed down towards the end of the war. So there's been nothing really much since, and it's, as I say, a fantastic start to what we've got. Just to give you an update on, the drilling, as I mentioned, 42 drill holes or thereabouts, and they were all contained in a very small tenement of about 0.4 square kilometres, a tiny little postage stamp size. They couldn't step out of there, obviously. We've been able to pick up 42 square kilometres, so completely surrounds Langeau, and we've got the depth extension and some really good high-quality lookalike targets immediately adjacent to Langeau. And we've got drilling approvals on some of those already, so we'll be hitting the ground running on testing those and, as I say, the Northern Nickel Line projects as well.
The Langeau comes with a small resource at this stage?
Yeah, there's just shy of 500,000 tonnes. As I said, it's high nickel. It's got 2.2% nickel in it, and it's got some good cobalt grades, 0.15% cobalt. That's pretty high for these sort of deposits. Also comes with copper, 0.7% copper in the resource that's defined. It's got quite a bit of palladium, which is interesting, 0.7 grams of palladium a tonne, and also about the same in gold. So it's a multi-commodity type project, with nickel being the centrepiece, and also obviously considerable cobalt. It's open at depth. It's open clearly along trend, and we've got surrounding that high grade core, we've got a lot of low grade mineralization that wasn't included in the JORC resource. The JORC resource was undertaken in 3 or 4 years ago, and it's JORC compliant, but clearly we need to add more tons and grade to that, and we think we've got a very, very good chance of doing that.
I think it'd be great if you could just outline to listeners that Europe, of course, has a car industry it wants to protect as the transition to electric vehicles gathers pace. It's got one problem, though. It's pretty short on the key battery materials. So I guess I'm just trying to gauge what sort of European interest there will be in this project.
Well, look, huge, absolutely huge, because European Union and Sweden, being a member, doesn't produce much in the way of nickel or cobalt at all, and imports mostly most of their requirements. So a deposit like this is really really going to attract a lot of attention, not only in Sweden, but the rest of Europe. And as you're probably aware, the European Union are also introducing a carbon tax. So any import of these sort of metals into the European Union, I think it's 2026, will be hit with a carbon tax, and of course we'll be producing within the union, so we'll be in a very favourable production spot should we proceed down that road. So we've got that, but we've also got gigafactories. They call them gigafactories for building these new lithium-ion batteries. Most of these gigafactories are going to take a lot of nickel and cobalt. Most of the companies that are doing this work don't want to find their nickel from overseas. They want to get it in the European Union if they can, and also, of course, they don't particularly want to get their cobalt from the Congo, which produces something like 2/3 of the world's cobalt. So any production that we can add to that and supply to these companies, they'll be very grateful. And we've had a lot of interest, actually, from several of them that we're talking to at the moment, looking at possible offtakes in a number of years' time when we are up and running.
You're touching on an interesting turning point in the nickel market. As we're all aware, nickel price is still a fantastic $12, $13 a pound post that squeeze on the LME early in the year. But you see a lot of investment banks at the moment saying, oh, well, look, Indonesian production is ramping up, so nickel might come under pressure in the next year or two before probably going into a long-term supply deficit post-2025. But the missing piece, I think that they're overlooking, and the Europeans are right onto this, of course, is that as much as we love our friends in Indonesia, the production of battery-grade material from laterite nickel sources is massively carbon-intensive. Now, I'm just wondering, I know there's a lot of water around in Sweden, and I think they even have a couple of nuclear plants. So I was just wondering, what would be the carbon emissions intensity of any production that you were able to come up with vis-a-vis what the Indonesians are doing?
As you say, we're laterite nickel deposits are not only hugely energy intensive, but they also create huge damage to the environment because they're generally shallow open capped mines over big areas. We'll be a relatively small underground mine, and we will we'll tap on the energy that Sweden provides, and 90% of that is generated either through their three nuclear power stations or their multiple hydro power stations. So combined with wind, they produce pretty well 90% of the Swedish electricity grid. So we'll have favourable electricity. We're also very lucky in that Sweden has some of the best and largest and most innovative electric mining manufacturers in the world. Groups like Sandvik and several others produce out of Sweden some of the most modern electrified mining equipment. They've already started introducing that into some of their own mines and worldwide. We'll be talking to them to electrify any mining operation that we undertake. That saves a lot of diesel, a huge amount of diesel, not only in the vehicles, but in pumping air and getting rid of dust and dirt out of the mine. So we'll be certainly tapping into that, and we'll be a very green modern mine for sure.
Yeah. And just more generally, what is your view of the nickel price at the moment, and where do you see it going?
Look, there was a hump a couple of months ago when nickel was suspended from trading from the LME, and it went into a bit of a hiding spot. I think nickel prices are going to continue to rally, and particularly for Class 1 nickel, which is a sulfide nickel deposit, we're looking at a lot of nickel worldwide produced out of Russia, which is Norilsk and their group. In fact, not all that far east of Finland, the big mines there that are looking at more and more issues with water problems and breakdowns and poorer production, and we're also looking, of course, at problems with Russia supplying the world with their nickel. So there's going to be, I think, a general rise in nickel prices over the years, particularly when some of these big gigafactories get up and running. They take a while; they take several years to build in some cases. And I think there's can't tell you how many, but there's many dozens now being built in Europe. So they've all got to get their nickel from somewhere.
Well. Post the IPO, you'll be hitting the ground straight away, will you?
Yeah, we're on the footpath now. We're trying to raise, and we're getting some very good interest at the moment. Closing date is the end of July, but we're probably close earlier should we fill our maximum. And we're getting a lot of interest out of Europe, as you would imagine, and particularly out of London. We're very happy with the way things are progressing. But, I think this is a unique opportunity for this sort of deposit and this sort of a metal group as well. And having the combination with nickel and cobalt just adds a lot of cream to the resource for sure.
Okay. What's the field season like over there? Is it pretty short?
The field season's all year round, surprisingly. It's not right up in the north. It's not in the Arctic Circle, and it's all year round. It does get snow and ice and cold winters, as you would imagine. I've been working up in northern Canada for off and on for the last few years, and I know what it's like to work in the winter. It's cold, but we do most of our drilling in the winter, as they do in Sweden, and we use a skid-mounted rigs to pull over the ice, and we can drill on lakes for that matter. But we, it's preferred. The government prefers us to drill with heavy rigs in the winter, and it's all done under central heating of specialised rigs. So easy to get and, easy to do. But, of course, our field work is mostly confined to the summer months when there's no snow and ice on the ground. So it's a little bit more of a juggle that way, but it's all quite workable. And we've got a really good team. You mentioned in the introduction we've got a good team based at Langeau. The local town there is also happens to be the home of the northern division of the Swedish Geological Survey. They have big offices and work sheds there. We we share those, or they allow us to share those with them, which is fantastic. It's only a 10-minute drive from Langeau. Our geologist on site is an experienced New Zealander like me. She's had a lot of time in Western Australia looking at these sort of deposits, and she's been working out of the Langeau district for the last 10 years or so. Speaks fluent Swedish and reads Swedish, and has a very good reputation within the local community for new discoveries and running these sort of programs. And she's well supported by some good technical people that we have also on site, consultants called Gia Vista. So all's going well there.
I can't remember her name, but that's a geologist you're talking about based in Sweden. Has she won some award?
Amanda Scott, yes. She's won a number of awards, but locally, probably most importantly, she's won I think it was the 10th Nordic Exploration Award in 2021, I think.
Okay. Which is so their version of Diggers and Dealers Award.
Kind of, yeah, I guess so. So she's well known in the Nordic exploration community. She's got experience in Norway and Finland as well, but she lives actually really right on site. So she's a great geologist, really good to have her on board.
Yeah, because I guess one of the issues for investors would be, well, how do you manage a company exploring in northern Sweden from a, you know, quote unquote Sydney base? But so how will that actually operate for the company?
Oh, look, I travel a lot. I won't be here in Sydney. As soon as we raise our funds, I'll be spending a lot of time on site. But we'll also, we've got another director also living in Sweden, Gavin Taylor-Bullen. He's got a background in geotech and various technical work. He's a Swedish national. He's on our board as well. He lives in Sweden. So I'll be managing the technical side of things, and I'll be doing that from Sydney as I have been in the past in North America. So there'll be a lot of travelling, and I like to get the boots on the ground, and we'll be looking at not only developing Langeau, but doing the exploration work on these peripheral departments. We're going to hit the ground running, or should I say the air running, because we'll be doing an airborne Sky TM survey as soon as we finish listing, and that'll cover all our tenements.
Impatient investors can be an impatient lot, and they like to see drilling results. What's the plan there, you think?
Well, I always believe in having, and these sort of deposits have always got good targets. We've been looking closely at securing a couple of drill rigs. One looking at deeper drilling capacity, where we need to clearly have the drill holes properly surveyed. Downhole surveyed, and another lighter rig that can move around in the summer and wetter ground conditions, but also drilling shallow holes. We've got some really good targets of really near the surface and some of the other target areas in the Northern Nickel Line. So we'll be looking at a smaller rig from that. So we've been talking to driller contractors, and we'll be lining those up to hit the ground certainly in the third and fourth quarters of this year.
Okay. Just a matter of interest, why Bayrock?
Why the name?
Tongue-twisting Swedish
well,
name.
We're a group, Joseph Naimi, our chairman, and myself and two or three other guys. We've been looking at different projects all over the world. We've got some projects in Spain, and we've had various things in Tasmania and the like, but we really haven't been rushing into it. We put it into Bayrock because that was the initial seed investors, including myself. We raised some pre-IPO seed money. We were all involved in that and contributing that and putting our money where we think the project's going to be going. So Bayrock is, I guess, named after a venture in named from a venture we had in Tasmania looking at a quarry complex for blue metal. So we look across a whole lot of different things and looking for fantastic investment opportunities like this. So Bayrock Resources will be in part owned by Bayrock Materials, so which will be the parent company. But as I say, as you said in the introduction, after we float, new shareholders will own a good slice, 54% of the issued shares.
Yeah, just glad that you haven't named it some tongue-twisting Swedish name. So Bayrock, nice and simple. Okay, so I guess lead manager, if people want to, or how should people go about accessing the prospectus, I guess, and who should they be speaking to?
Yes, well, the best thing to do is to go to our website. You can download the prospectus there, and we have also a PowerPoint clearly describing who we are and what we're doing. Mm-hmm. RFC Ambrian are our corporate advisor and lead managers, and they can be contacted also mainly through their Perth office, and the contact number there is I can read it out if you like. It's or hold on, I don't know that I've got it right beside me, but they're in Perth, and you can certainly easily get that on our website of Bayrock Resources.
Yeah, no, you're right. The website's very good. It's got presentations there, the prospectus, obviously, all 300 pages of it. So those interested, you should go and have a read. An interesting one. If these projects were in the back blocks of WA, they would have been crawled over like no tomorrow for the last 20, 30 years. So exciting stuff. So with that, Ian, wish you all the best with it. Be one to watch as the here we've got a new Nordic battery metals explorer listed on the ASX, tapping into that European demand for battery materials as they protect their car industry going forward or grow into the electric vehicle revolution. So with that, Ian, thanks for your time today. Good luck with it all. We'll keep in touch.
Thank you very much, Barry. Good talking to you.